Hey everyone, welcome to our self-belief school coaching call. So fun. Welcome, Dale. This is your first SBS call. It's so nice to see you here. Welcome. You're so very welcome to be here. It's really cool. I just want to apologize in advance because my eyes keep streaming. I haven't got any makeup on because my eyes keep streaming and I'm recovering from this cold that me and my husband keep giving each other over the last couple of months. I'm so over it. I can't even tell you. So apologies for my like croaky voice and slightly kind of energy. But yeah, that's just real life. So look, let's take a moment just to kind of get here and be in our bodies right now. I just invite you to put your feet on the floor. And just feel the earth holding you, even if that's one floor down. Just feel your bum in your seat. Invite your hips to soften, your belly to soften. Just know that you're held in place. Just bring your attention into your body. Maybe your shoulders need to be rolled a little. And your neck might need a little stretch. You can invite your jaw to soften. Give a little stretch for your face. Just bring your attention to your heart. Notice what's here today. What emotions or thoughts, ideas are with you right now? Just notice nothing needs to change. Your to-do list can wait for a little bit. Just pay attention to how much energy you're bringing today. Maybe the beginning of your day, the end of your day. Give yourself a little rating of 1 to 10. How much energy have you got today, right now? Just notice that doesn't need to change either. Just is what it is. Just give yourself a moment of thanks for making this time for you to be here. And when you're ready, just give your toes a wiggle. Come back to the room. Just softly open your eyes. I know we just don't do that enough. I know I don't do that enough. So I hope that helps you just to kind of come into this space. It just occurred to me, Laura, this is your first SBS call as well. You've been joining us in Bravehearts. I'm so used to seeing you there. So this is lush. So usually the way these calls go is we kind of get here and I do a little bit of a chat and then we see what if anyone's bringing anything that they want to celebrate or share or ask for questions on. You can bring anything at all to these calls. There's no agenda at all. And usually there is, I found the magical part of this is that whatever you're bringing, it is so helpful for someone else. And often I think if you're observing someone who's bringing something that is relevant for you, it can sometimes be so much easier to see it and be in it, because it's sort of one step slightly removed. So I think that's the beauty of these group gatherings, is we can see ourselves in our shared experience without feeling maybe like we're right in the center of it all. So there's absolutely no agenda. You can come to as many or as few calls as you wish. And yeah, it's an open space for you. And sometimes that can feel like chaos, right? So I always give a little bit of a sort of personal update, what I'm thinking about, what's coming up for me. And the purpose of that really is to kind of share the reality of when you're living with self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth and self-trust, which I absolutely am, that it doesn't mean that, you know, it's all, you know, farting unicorns. You know, it's not. Like, life is still life. People are still going to people. I love these sessions too, Sheena. Yeah. And I think as well, my sense is, especially after the pandemic, we are so hungry for connection in whatever form we can get it in. And we want that connection to be rich. You know, we don't want to talk about the weather or a loft conversion. You know, we want to talk about the real stuff. So that's what these sessions are here for. So I wanted to give you a thing I've been thinking about this morning. And usually these ideas just sort of drop in. I'm a very long-term meditator. And so whenever I've got a call with you all, I always kind of say, okay, like, what do we need to talk about today? And usually some idea will float around me, or it will come to me in the shower after I've meditated. This morning, actually, I didn't really get very much. I think that's because I'm feeling a bit flat. And then I just read an email from a friend of mine. And I noticed that all of us here are business owners. And so I think this might really at home for you, but it really sparked me up, and I think I'm going to write my newsletter this week around this topic. But it's really about the rush that we're all in, the rush that we can get swept up in, this idea that fixes can be quick and life can be hacked, that there is a simple, usually it's a 3 or a 5 step process, no effort required, and it will not in any way involve any discomfort, right? That this kind of prevalence of this idea that any change has got to be fast and it's got to be pain-free, and it's readily available to you. It will usually come in the form of a marketing email, right? This idea, or an Instagram ad. But sometimes it can just be in the way we talk to each other, the way we hold space for each other, right? Like if we have someone we love who's in distress, that somehow we want to smooth that over and help them to feel good really fast, because often it's uncomfortable for us to see them in that way. But I was just thinking about how I'm not really here for that. Like I've in my experience, change takes time. Like, it takes a long time. I spent 2017, I spent that whole year making friends with criticism. It took me a year to kind of really get underneath, what are my beliefs about criticism? What do I make it mean about me? How do I feel? It's such an icky experience. And I was doing a real big people-pleasing dance to try and avoid it, which was so exhausting. And it took most of a year to really get a handle on it. And I'm thinking, that's interesting, isn't it? And the research bears that out, right? If we are changing some of our core beliefs, it will usually take around about a year. So sorry to disappoint anyone who's thinking, I'm going to join self-belief school and it's all going to be sorted. I'll give myself 6 weeks, it'll be fine. And I guess, you know, I've been thinking about the idea of why we rush, why we value quickness. And maybe the flex, as the kids call it, right? The real flex is actually the ability to be in the discomfort for a bit and to see what that has to teach us. Because I know for myself, just in that single example of, you know, getting more comfortable with the idea of being criticized, I had to kind of sit in that and be criticized and put myself in positions where I might be criticized, say things that not everyone would agree with, not to provoke, but just to be authentic. And then feel the sting of that and kind of go, okay, what now? It's now the risk is here. How do I feel? What am I making this mean about me, about the other person? What do I want to do? Because my usual response was to kind of defend and attack, right? And we see this a lot, right? Like the haters. If someone disagrees with you, they're a hater. And I just think, well, maybe they just have a different opinion, right? Maybe they know more about something than I do. I find that hard to believe. But, you know, maybe they are, maybe they've given this more thought. Maybe they're coming at this from a completely different perspective to me. Maybe I've stirred something up in them that was, I could never have known about. And so that only came from sitting in that discomfort. And it's actually through that process that I really got to grips with what self-doubt is here for, right? Which is to protect us from these risks, these big risks that we work so hard to try and avoid. And every single one of those risks is a feeling. We don't want to feel criticized, rejected, disappointed. We don't want to feel overwhelmed, the overwhelm of complexity, of failure. You know, all of those things, that the difficult feelings that we find really hard to be with, that's the thing that we're working so damn hard to try and avoid. And I was like, oh, hang on. That means if I can be okay with what I'm feeling, the spectrum of emotions, I think that might be the secret source. There's something in there. If I can be with whatever's coming and meet that with a sort of, you know, neutrality of some sort, go, oh, okay, this is happening, and notice how I'm responding without getting swept up in it all, there's something in that. And you know, just to say, you know, that came to me, and then I started reading a lot about things like cognitive distortions, the ways that we interpret what's going on that don't really serve us. And one of those is all or nothing, right? It's, they're either a lover or a hater. And another one is like emotional reasoning, right? I feel this, so I have to, I kind of have to respond from this emotion. And another is globalization, right? Where we go, this is always true. This never happens to me. Everyone is like this. No one is like this. You know, we kind of use this global language and apply it to a specific context. These three cognitive distortions are the things that self-doubt loves to latch onto, And it's all to try and protect us from being in the discomfort. Instead of putting our energy into deciding who's a lover and who's a hater, what if we can sit and, oh, how does this feel? What am I thinking? What's happening for me right now? What does this remind me of? Where am I at? And actually be with the feeling. And what I found is that that experience of the discomfort is the thing that helps us to move through it. So the rush to the good part, right? The rush to make everything kind of tied up in a bow, to feel like we can bypass all of that discomfort, that somehow a good life is a happy life 100% of the time, right? Actually, I think that's kind of a, I don't know, is it an immature? I don't know, that word kind of feels a bit judgy, but there's something about that that it just feels lacking to me. feels a bit surface, that actually, you know, I want to feel all the way alive. And so that means being willing to feel all the feelings. Even though sometimes I'm like, you know, like everyone in a heap going, why is this happening to me? I hate this so much. I don't want to. This is far too grown up and adult. I don't want to feel it. Like, totally with you on that. But I think there's something about recognizing that all of these messages about the quick fix and the life hacks and the ways to bypass the difficult moments actually don't serve us at all. They're not helping us in any way, because the real kind of the real growth, the real expansion of who we know ourselves to be comes from sitting in sometimes, you know, prolonged discomfort and going, what, why is this, why am I feeling this? Why is this happening? What's this about? And, you know, the way, I think the fastest way through that is to actually ask for help, right? It's why I just love this work so much, is because time and again, the fastest way through is to have someone sit with you in that and not try and fix it, not try and, you know, help you move through it, but to just sit with you and go, yeah, this makes sense to me too. So all to say, that's kind of what's on my mind at the moment. So, and I guess, you know, I hope that helps. If you're watching the replay, if you're here live, just that idea that, you know, we make it mean if we're feeling something that we even call them negative emotions, right? But if we're just feeling something that's a bit tricky to feel, it feels a bit crunchy, that doesn't mean anything's gone wrong. It doesn't mean anything's gone wrong. It's actually, I think, a doorway into knowing yourself on a deeper, richer level. So yeah, that's what I'm thinking about at the moment. Who has something they want to chat about today? Who's bringing an area of discomfort, a feeling they're not great with, something in there, something where self-doubt is popping up? Who wants to share? You are so, so welcome. Give us a wave. Sharon, I can see you're kind of like tentatively waving.
I'm just like, is anybody else going to do it? So I don't want to hog the session.
Does anyone else? Looks like it's you, Sharon, and then we'll come to you, Dale. Yeah.
Well, only because you hit the nail on the head with the whole discomfort thing, because I'm like, oh, this is what I'm going. I know I did mention this in the discussion thing about the, so just put it into context for everybody else. So I have this membership group that I've had like a long time, that membership community, and there are different elements to it, but the community group has been on Facebook. And then 4 years ago, I moved it off Facebook to Mighty Networks because of, you know, I was fed up with the whole Facebook thing. And it was really hard to get people to move away from Facebook, although some people did like it. And so I gave in the end, because it felt like I was just, it was becoming almost like a full-time job trying to persuade and cajole and spoon feed people and all this business. So I gave in, went back to Facebook. Just recently, in the last few months, with the whole Facebook thing again. By the way, I just want to say I'm not anti-Facebook. I've always quite liked it, but I've just become increasingly kind of uncomfortable with having my business community on Facebook. And there's been quite a few people in the membership now who actually won't go in the Facebook group at all. They join the membership and they don't go in the group, and they kind of miss out a little bit. You know, we're excluding them from the conversation. And there's all the hacking, the profiles, you know, I've been hacked a few times, you know, all the stuff and, you know, whatever. So I just had this strong urge to kind of move it back, you know, to Mighty Networks. So I invited, set it all up again. Oh, and the other thing as well, I have a number of different programs and courses and things. So they have been on Mighty Networks for quite a while and they've been working really well. And it's really nice for me because it means that everything's in one place, all my different programs and everything. So it suits me really well. So I decided I would set it all up. We set it all up and we'd start inviting people in kind of like, as you know, for a test to see how they got on with it, which I've been doing. And it's been really nice to see some of the ones who don't go near Facebook to say, oh, this is great, because I feel kind of like involved now. There've been the usual people who come on, they set the profile up and then they go off again and we haven't seen them again, but all that kind of stuff. But it's coming to the point now where I have to like make a decision, and this is what I will be avoiding. Because what I've done, because I'm like a people pleaser, I'm aware that there are some people in the group that will love Facebook and they won't want to move on to Mighty Networks and they'll kick off about it. And so what I've been doing really, really, is inviting the people into the group who I know would agree with me, you know, who won't make a fuss and go, oh, this is great, Sharon, I love this, and not really paying attention to the ones who I know that might be a little bit kind of anti. And then I was thinking, sorry, I know this is a bit of a ramble, but then I was thinking, oh, well, maybe I can have two groups, and kind of the ones, if they want to chat in Facebook, let's just let them do that. I don't want to take people, don't want to take things away and treat people like children and everything. And then, of course, I was thinking, well, that's not really very good, because what will happen is people just go to their favourite place and all the rest of it. And then I was like having a word with myself, going, Sharon, this is your business. You want to have this group on because it makes your life easier. And there's so many other things to recommend it as a business community on there. So just say that this is what's happening, and just say that by the end of February, this group will be in there. And just say, but I'm just,
so what's the discomfort
of doing that?
Tell me about the what do you think is going to happen if you say, and by the way, the end of February, what if you say by the 1st of December, this Facebook group,
oh, I can't say 1st of December. Got to give them more time than
so tell me about the discomfort. What's going on?
The discomfort is that I'm going to be unpopular, and the discomfort is they're not going to like me, and they, you know, people might leave, and yeah, it's just, and also they'll say, oh, well, we did this before and it didn't work, and now she's doing it again, and kind of like, what's all this about? And yeah, but that was 4 years ago, and everything's moved on, and the platform's moved on, and we've got some different people, and they don't like Facebook. I'm just trying, it's the usual thing about trying to please everybody, and it's like an impossible job.
Yeah.
But I always give myself that job of trying to please everybody, and that's why I get myself.
So what happened? Because you're working really, really hard, right, at trying to avoid this discomfort.
I know.
So talk me through someone, what's the worst thing that can happen here?
That people just say nasty things about me, or
okay,
don't like me, or they disagree with me, or put a post in the group and I feel there might be a bit of conflict, or I don't know. Okay.
So people, anonymous people or specific people?
I could probably think of a few individuals that I would probably, it's the ones who shout the loudest, isn't it, you know?
Right. And they will say what?
Well, what the hell are we doing this for? We did this before and it didn't work. And I suppose that is my other fear as well, that we're going to do this again. And again, what if it doesn't work? I can't possibly move back to Facebook again, because people are going to look at me and go, what the hell? She doesn't even know what she's doing. She keeps flip-flopping from thing to thing and kind of like...
So what do you notice about the way you're thinking about this?
It's indecisive, it's all over the place, it's rooted, it's giving, placing too much emphasis on, and again, other people who, and I've been through this before when with the live events thing and all the angst I went through that, and I woke up one morning and thought, Sharon, people are probably not as bothered about this as you think they are. you know. I have this thing that everybody's really bothered about it, and it's like really important. And probably it's not.
Yeah, like your imagination
you know.
is doing a great job of imagining what everyone's thinking, right? Quite specific things.
Yeah.
So when you are thinking those things, right? When you've got those thoughts bowling around in your big brain, your big imagination, they're gonna disagree. They're gonna think, "What's she doing? She can't decide what she's doing." They're going to bring up that we used to be here and now we've changed our minds, all of this sort of stuff. Can you tap into, like, what's the feeling all of that brings up for you? What's the emotion?
Well, it's the feeling of, well, the two things. One of, like, not being very good at something. You know, kind of not, yeah, just not being right, not really know what I'm doing, not being good at something.
Right.
And the other thing is about feeling not, you know, not being liked, not being, people saying bad things about me.
Yeah.
When you get the two together, it's like, oh, whoa.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense why you're not taking, you know, steps that are really clear here, right?
Yeah.
Because actually there's a lot of confusion in your mind around what to do.
Yes.
Because you're trying to keep everybody happy,
yes,
but not you.
Yes.
And you're trying to manage the discomfort that people are not going to like you, and then they're going to think you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, that's a really coherent response, if that's the worry. Right. When you sit in that sort of that place of, they don't think I'm very good, they don't like me.
Mm.
What happens inside you? What memories come up? Images of the future? Feelings, sensations? Just notice your experience.
Yeah, it's the same old, it always goes here, I always feel it here, that kind of, like my stomach, like, does a, it's kind of flip, you know, over.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just really feel it. Makes me feel quite frightened in a way, which is crazy, you know, that kind of. And then I get frustrated with myself because it's not as if I can't see it. It's like I can see it. I know what I'm doing.
Mm.
And I get frustrated with myself that I can't.
So just stay with that belly flip feeling,
mm-hmm.
right? That feeling that's actually quite frightening. That sensation of your belly flipping over. I think we've all had that. It's, yeah, like the kind of belly drops out almost.
Yeah, it does.
And you may want to close your eyes for this, Sharon. I just want to invite you to kind of play with that sensation a little bit. But if you just go into your belly and your mind, into that sensation of your belly flipping over, and the emotion of feeling quite frightened by all of that. Just imagine that sensation. It may have colours associated with it, or it may be moving, it might be static. And I just wonder if you could reach into your belly and touch that feeling, that sensation, what do you imagine it would feel like?
Kind of like first word that came into my mind was like gloopy, kind of like
gloopy, yeah.
Gloopy, kind of like, and then like you could, because I don't know, like Play-Doh or something, do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So,
like gloopy Play-Doh.
It moves because the sensation of it moving about, it flips, you know, so I feel as though you could manipulate it, you know.
It's so consistent, right? Like with the metaphor of it as well, the manipulation of it. Yeah. Does it have a color?
Well, I only thought pink because that's the color of Play-Doh. But don't like pink anyway, so I'm not sure. Well, maybe it's because I don't like pink, so that would be good.
So you don't like this feeling, this
No.
pink, gloopy,
No.
Play-Doh-y feeling. What does it want to say to you? Does it have a message for you?
I want to say that, well, there are two voices. Like the first one is the nagging, the shouty voice, like, for God's sake, sort yourself out. But
Right.
then another voice might be, it'll be okay, you know?
Yeah, it'll be okay. And does the gloopy pink mess want you to know anything?
Maybe it's saying that you can do hard things, maybe.
So it might be there to help you do hard things. But it carries that sort of signature emotion of fear. It's scared of doing this hard thing. What would you like to say to it?
Go away.
And just remember, like this is a part of you that's really frightened. And it's a bit confused and it doesn't quite know. It's sort of darting around a bit. But it feels frightened. What would you like it to know? What would you like to say to this part of you?
I want to say that it's okay to be frightened, because it's like coming from a good place of wanting to make sure the people are okay, I guess.
Yeah, it's okay that it's frightened. And if you think about your like healthy self, Sharon, the part of you that's leading your business from a place of real healthy adulthood, what does that part of you want to say to this frightened, gloopy, pink stuff?
I think what I just said before, that actually people don't care about this as much as you think. It's actually, you know, it's just yesterday's chip paper for them, isn't it? Kind of, you know, they probably don't really give it a second thought, other than the initial, oh, I don't really want to do this. And I'm just blowing it all out of proportion. So I think that's what my healthy adult self wants to say. Just keep it in perspective. Just
Just keep it in perspective. People probably aren't thinking about this as much as you think. They'll adjust. How does that feel to the pink gloopy mess?
Yeah. Feels like more more sense of balance.
Like it can still be there and it can still feel a bit frightened. But there's a part of you that's like, it's okay. It's okay that you're frightened. And these people probably aren't thinking about it as much as you. And it's okay to make this choice. They'll adjust. We can keep it in perspective. Just notice how different that feels. Is there anything you want to tell this pink gloopy mess before we leave it?
Well, only that it's okay for it to come back if it wants. But I'll just notice it.
Yeah. And
just maybe just accept it.
Yeah. Beautiful. So Sharon, when you're ready, come back to us. Yeah, beautiful. That was such a honour to witness you being with that discomfort. You did that beautifully. Yeah. So notice all we did there was got in touch with the sensation, right? Like this, the feelings that were coming up. What's the sensation? What is this all about? And you were able to kind of imagine, if you could reach in and touch the sensation, the feelings, what it would feel like. And then we just had a little conversation with it. Like, why are you here? What are you trying to tell me? What is this about? And this can be such a lush way of just being with the discomfort. Because that's what you did. Like for the last sort of 5-10 minutes, you've been in that discomfort and had a meaningful interaction with it rather than darting around it or trying to avoid it. You actually went in there and went, okay, what are you all about? And the thing is that we'll get something from it. It will tell us something. It's always there for a reason, a really good reason. It's always got something to say. Might take a little while to kind of tap into that and get a sense of it. Because it is a weird thing to do, right? To go into your body and imagine a metaphorical sensation. But what I love about the way you did that, Sharon, was you were just like, okay, it's a pink, gloopy, Play-Doh-y thing, and it's frightened. And it's there because it's worried. It's coming from a good place. It's trying to take care of everybody. But it's also, it's there, and it's real, and it is frightened. And so once we've got a sense of what that sensation, what that thing is there to tell us, we can then say, okay, and what does our healthy adult self want this part of us to know? What does it want to offer? And you are so great at, you know, I can do this. This is a hard thing and I can do this hard thing. We can take some perspective. You know, it's highly likely that not everyone is thinking as much about this as you are. And it's okay for that feeling, that sensation of fear to be there.
And I've been lightning it as well in my mind this week about going to the dentist because you know, obviously I'm on this journey. I've like got a visit three was this week, because like the others won't know. Like last year, I broke my jaw and had all these missing teeth and broken teeth and all this business. And so the dentist has been really great. He's like just doing baby steps. And so I'm on visit three, and I went this week and yesterday or the day before. Anyway, see, I can't remember now. And I was like going through that process in my mind about almost like trying to make friends with the feelings that I was having, because I realized that in order to, it's almost like I got to the stage in my head that I actually wanted to go. It was weird because I was like, because I know that the outcome for me is going to be like better. And it was really weird how telling myself that and having those perspective kind of really helped me to the point where I literally was, I forgot that I was going. Woke up in the morning and I was like, and then I got halfway through my day and I was like, oh God, I'm going to the dentist this afternoon. Whereas like 2 weeks, a few weeks, it would have been the only thing on my mind. But yeah. And every time I thought about it, I'd have that flip feeling. And yeah. I found myself, so I was like, oh, okay, something's changing.
That's great.
Anyway, I went and it was absolutely fine. And so to the extent when he said to me about, oh, your next appointment, he said, oh, we can, you know, that's fine. We can leave it up till after Christmas if you want. I'm like, no, I'm coming before Christmas. And I was like, wow, because normally I'd be putting it off for like the longest time possible. Because actually, my mouth feels so much better. I feel like I can just speak so much better after going through the discomfort of going. So I'm just focusing on kind of like the outcome. And so what you said there about the membership thing, I was like, well, I've got to focus on the outcome. Like, it's going to be so much better. I might be going through the discomfort, but keep focused on the outcome and just navigate your way through all those squishy feelings.
And, yeah, you don't have to avoid the discomfort. You
know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I love that you're having these parallel experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? I was so disappointed that I didn't get a sticker. I wanted to come out. I was brave at the dentist.
Amazing. Yeah, kids get all the good shit.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I did have like a little glug of red wine before I went in, but never mind.
Totally understand.
He prescribed me a Valium and I was like, I don't really want a Valium.
No.
And my daughter said to me, she said something about dentist. I said to him, what is Valium going to be like? And he said, it's just like having a glass of wine. And my daughter said to me, why don't you just have a glass of wine, Mum? Yeah. We're going to have a whole bit of like that much, but it's just that much, just a little bit. Fine.
Love it. So it sounds like there's a part of you, even though there's this part of you that's kind of working overtime to try and manage everyone's expectations.
Yeah.
When you get out of their space and come back to you.
Yeah.
And your healthy adult self. You kind of already know what you want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so right, yeah.
And the outcome, it seems to me, just from what you've shared, the outcome is clarity. There is a uniform experience for everyone who's, no matter what course they're doing, it's so much easier for you. And you get rid of all of the very good reasons why you wouldn't want to be in a public space. And with software that you don't own.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's really good reasons to make that choice.
Oh, you know.
Yeah. How does that feel to you, Sharon, just to kind of get to that place?
Yeah, it feels so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well done. Thank you for letting us witness that.
No, thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that was a little weird, but still.
A little weird, yeah.
Yeah. I love that you guys are willing to do the weird stuff with me. Brilliant. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you. Dale, it must be like 4 in the morning there.
What? Is it really? Oh, my God.
It's only 10:47 p.m.
Okay, that feels like 4 in the morning to me.
No, I feel like I'm the crazy lady that turns up with the crazy hair at night.
Perfect.
I just thought I'd quickly share. I'm working corporate. I'm 23 and a half years into a corporate career. And I'm a senior executive in that career that I've built over that 23 and a half years. And about just over 3 years ago, there was an event in my life that really reordered what my purpose and priorities are. And so ever since going back to work after that, so what actually happened is that my husband passed away. And so ever since that and going back to work, my sense of purpose really changed. And I've been dreaming about, you know, this is time for me to really think about how I want to contribute to the world and all of the things. So I've been thinking about it, dreaming about it, planning for it at some point in my future. And I got to a point this year where recently I felt really burnt out and I thought I'm going to take leave from my corporate career. And so I have been on leave and then I'm extending that leave. Now, I thought I would be elated when that leave was arranged and approved, and I was not. I did not feel feelings of elation. I freaked out. And it only happened, it kind of came about yesterday, and I'm just waiting for the final approval now. It was kind of surprising to me, I think, because I was so convinced that I'd be like, this is it. I think what happened was my critic and my bystander both got themselves involved from the perspective of, who are you? You're an employee. You know, you've never run your own business. Who do you think you are going out and doing that? So all the critic self-doubt crept in. And then the bystander element, I think, was, oh, now you have actually got time that you can do something rather than thinking about doing something. And so I journaled because I tend to get very up in my head with things. So I thought I need to get some of this out of my head. So I journaled and that helped. That did help a bit. And I think the other thing that really struck me was the anxiety I felt having to talk to my boss about taking leave, because I felt like I was letting people down and I'm going to disappoint people by not being there and being available. So it was just interesting to observe what I thought versus what reality turned out to be. I feel a bit better about it today. I think I've worked through some of it with my journaling. I still don't feel completely, I think it's going to take time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was interesting that you started with that today. As well. I was like, yes, I'm feeling that.
Yeah. The discomfort of space and spaciousness.
It was a real realization of, I have lived my life doing, like being busy and doing things. And there's always something to do. There's always somewhere to be, always something to deliver. And now all of a sudden I've kind of stopped. And, yeah, that feels very uncomfortable.
And so that sounds really understandable. If you're a doer and then you get a lot of space, it's like, oh, this is new. I kind of don't know who I am in space. I know who I am when I've got a shit ton to do. And I would also offer, in the kind of work that you do, getting stuff done, highly rewarded, very valued, ton of validation coming your way every day. I bet you get praised left, right, and center. Dale's a safe pair of hands. Sticky problem, give it to Dale. She'll sort it out, right? And yep. So when we're in a place of spaciousness, that those things aren't with us because it's different. So one of the things that can happen is we associate spaciousness with the opposite of doing. Right. So if I'm not doing, I'm just being, and we can put a whole spin on that. I'm lazy. I'm not productive. What will people think? Because, you know, I've gone from being a doer to whatever the hell this is, right? They'll say she's changed. I don't know who I am in this. All of that stuff can happen, right? And so what I would offer, Dale, is this to me sounds like a really sophisticated form of your protector saying it's all or nothing. You either have to be doing or you're just lazy and pointless. I'm paraphrasing, right?
Oh, no, I think you're in my brain. I literally, yeah. The words in my head were,
yeah.
What if I just become lazy and I don't do anything?
Yeah. We assume that, right? That, well, if I'm not doing all the time, then I will, you know, be found under a blanket of Dorito dust on the sofa, right? And actually, what I would say is, don't forget you've got a healthy adult self who's in there saying something, I imagine, like, oh, this rest is going to be so good for us. Just a period of rest, because then we get to dream and plan. We get to see what we want to do. All the things that you've been imagining might happen if you had this, if only you had the space.
Yeah.
You can play with that. I wouldn't put too much pressure on yourself to like fill it up with productive things to take you in the new direction, right? It's about coming back to a kind of balance outside of the all or nothing.
Mm. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that bystander critic combo, I think it's super common, or I see it a lot with new business owners as well, because it's that thing of you don't know enough and are you good enough? It's almost like catnip for those beliefs, right, when you start a new business. And what I would say is, you know, give yourself a couple of years to kind of let that dissipate. The more you give yourself evidence that you're learning, you are doing things, you can move forward, you're supported, you're in a place where you're figuring this stuff out, and you see more evidence of you, you know, just witnessing yourself doing that, then those things will quieten down. They just do. And your self-doubt has a lot less to do, right? As you kind of bring more of your other resources, your self-belief and self-trust, and particularly into play. So just know, right, that self, the bystander is like the shadow of self-trust, right? It's like, oh, I don't know enough. I can't make any decisions. I can't do anything. And the critic is the shadow of self-belief, right? I don't know what to do. If whatever I do is not going to be good enough, I don't know if I can do this. It's that very kind of existential stuff, like who even am I? Yeah. And so both of those shadows are not real. They're just patterns of protection. They're not who you are. They're not descriptions of your personality. They're trying to protect you from this very courageous thing that you're doing, which is going, I wonder what else I can do. My life has taken an unexpected turn, and look at me using that energy that you have available to make something meaningful from that experience. That's huge. Not everyone does that. That's a choice you're making to be really brave. So, you know, there's some encouragement that comes in that too, right? That self-encouragement. Look at me doing this thing. I did a brave thing. I asked my boss for some bloody time off. He's like, what the hell? Because he's a doer, I bet, right? So we're often going against the culture that we're in to do these different brave things.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Yeah. I work in public service in Australia. So it's very much, it's an institution. Yeah.
It sure is. Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds to me, Dale, like you're having a very understandable response, right,
Thank you.
to a brave situation. Or a
Thank
situation
you.
Where you're choosing to be really brave. And I think, it, you know, any of those stories that you might be telling yourself, that if I'm not 100% doing and getting all that validation, then something's gone wrong, right? It's like, you don't have to make yourself wrong in this. And it's like, how can I bring myself into a place of balance where I get to try some stuff out around who I want to be here?
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you. Thanks
You're
for
so
letting
welcome.
Me share.
You're so welcome. Oh my God. I can remember as well, like the first day I took voluntary redundancy from public sector 13 or 14 years ago. And I distinctly, I can still smell the my kitchen on that first morning where I'm sitting having a coffee and I had a full-on panic attack going, oh my God, I don't have a job title for the first time in my adult life. And I don't have any kids, so I've always put my kind of purpose as being my job, and suddenly I didn't have a job and I was just like, what's the point of me? I can remember sending my now husband a text message saying, what is the point of me? He was just like, whoa, can you do some laundry like until I get home, like just keep yourself occupied. But yeah, I that sense of I don't have a job title, I'm not sure what the point of me is, I don't know who I am in this, was very visceral. And it makes sense if your identity has been caught up in one role for a long time. When that shifts, then it's an identity shift. Yeah.
That's felt very present for me. Like the thought that I've had is, who even am I? Like, who even is this person? And who am I if I'm not in this career doing the things that I do, solving problems and, you know, being the person that I've been?
Yeah.
Who am I? And what have I actually learned in 20, 23 and a half years that I could share outside of that environment? I don't really have anything that I could take out into the real world and share. They're the thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I would offer, Dale, is that you've also had another big identity shift, right, in losing your husband.
Mm.
You've lost that title, you know, of even though I'm sure you still feel like you were someone's wife. But
yeah.
That identity shift is a big one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. And that's also one of the thoughts I had. There's already been so much, you know, my children very, very young. They aren't reliant on me in the way that they used to. And not only that Steve passed, but he was unwell for almost 7 years. So it was career, carer, you know, doing all the things, being really responsible. And so you're right, that identity. And so with this identity, I think the one normal thing that I had in my life after Steve died was my career.
Yeah.
That was normality for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if that, you know, is shifting as well, it's like, geez. Yeah.
No Jesus. Wonder. No wonder it feels a bit like you're standing on some sand that's moving.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little piece of homework if you want it, maybe a journaling.
Yeah. Question. I do love homework.
Right? I figured you might be. You're a doer like me. I see you, sister. Right? So one thing you could do is right at the top of the page, who am I? Answer the question.
Well, that's a good one.
Fill the pages, right? Let yourself, you know, kind of grieve as well for who you're not.
Yeah.
So who are you? You know, it's, I think that you and I always, you know, I get so emotional when I answer that question for myself, because I come back to, you know, actually, fundamentally, I'm a child of the universe. Like, insane, you know, that's me. Like, and underneath all of that, there's something in here that survives after I go too. So what the heck is that about, you know? And so you come back to some really core truths about yourself that are nothing to do often with titles, roles, responsibilities you might have. And that's kind of, you know, that's that part of you that is your soul, whatever that means to you, that is, you know, that cannot be ended. That's a true truth.
Just say, Dale, as well, I mean, that, you know, when my kids left home properly, because they do it in stages, don't they? You go to uni and they go to, you know, and you know, and I cling on to kind of keep their bedrooms the same and all this sort of thing. And you kind of, it took me about 3 years to finally accept that, you know, I mean, my son lives in America now, which is really hard for me. It's really hard. That's a whole other story. It took me about 3 years to find it. You spend your whole, when they're little, you spend the whole time wishing they, you'd have your life and you'd be able to do all this thing. And I woke up and I'm like, what am I going to do? I can spend all day in my business if I want to. I don't have, and it was so weird. And it was like, well, every time my son came home, I was like, I'm so happy to do your washing, you know? And it's like, and it's all about that sense of being needed and that identity. And it's so weird when you don't have that anymore. And I know one of the themes of this morning has been about taking time. And it does take time to get your head around that. It's not something that you can just fix. Because it's right at the core of your identity, isn't it? And it's you've always been a mum and a cat and all this sort of thing. And it's kind of like, wow, what's that? What's my purpose? What's the point of me? You know, it's really weird. Really weird. So I really get where you are.
Thank you. You know. I'm glad it's not just me.
No, but it's never just you, right? I think that's the whole point, right? It's never, ever just you. Yeah. Yeah, I love that, Tina, as well. Yeah, have that critic bystander combo. It's a really sophisticated protective pattern, right? And you come back to it always with, you know, when we're working with the critic, it's about compassion and imperfection. When we're working with the bystander, it's about the big why. What are the values that are leading you towards making decisions and trusting yourself? Yeah, really cool. How does that feel to you, Dale, just to kind of take away? You've even got some homework bonus.
Yeah, love it, love it. No, that's really helpful. And just being able to talk about it out loud as well, to be able to share. So, yeah, really, really helpful.
I'm so glad.
And nice to know that even though I thought in my head, oh, maybe this is normal, I don't know. It's nice to hear from other people that, yeah, your brain's doing its normal thing. Yeah. And I did get to practice dropping into my body, given that I'm so in my head most of the time. How did it feel in my body? And, you know, what did it look like? And if I had to, you know, if I was to pick a color. So I did do that, which felt good.
That's so great. That's so great. Nice.
Thanks.
Oh, so courageous. Freaking love it, you guys. All right, loves, I'm going to let you go. And just know, because all of you are in Bravehearts as well, we've got our co-working on Friday morning at 11 at this time. If you want to join in, you're so, so welcome. I'd love to see you there. All right, go be awesome in the world, and I'll see you soon. Yeah.
Take care of you all.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye. Bye.